Hello and welcome again to another episode of Tax Resolution Talk. My name's Jim Wade, tax attorney here in Maine, and in this episode I'm going to be speaking with Jared Altman, an enrolled agent, about the myths that are out there regarding the IRS Offer and Compromise Program. And for those of you who aren't aware, the Offer and Compromise Program is basically a debt settlement agreement between you and the IRS to resolve all of your back tax problems once and for all. And I really enjoyed this interview because I think there's a lot of misinformation out there about who does or doesn't qualify for the Offer and Compromise Program. So I hope you find this informative, maybe even a little entertaining. And if you have any other questions or maybe some other myths you'd like us to explore about Offer and Compromise or other IRS topics, please let us know. I'll have that information in the show notes. Without further ado, please enjoy this interview.
And we're live.
So today, Jared, we were going to talk about offer and compromise myths. So those things you find on the internet or kind of around the water cooler that people have a misunderstanding about that we're going to fix, because that's what we do here. I guess I'll start off first. The one myth that always gets me is the, hey, I've heard that you can settle with the IRS for 10% of what's owed. Just sort of a flat, you could just work something out with the IRS, 10%.
Yeah, I'll get off. Just throw a number on the table and clearly they'll accept it.
Yeah, pennies on the dollar. I heard the ads. They say I owe $1 million. I sell it for $100. It's got to be true. I'll let you take the first stab at this one, because you know I have my own words I want to say and all colorful.
I would say the thing that I usually find is most helpful for getting people to understand how this process actually works is that the current bankruptcy rules were actually modeled after the IRS offer in compromise program. I always get this thing wrong because I'm not a bankruptcy attorney, but I think it was it BAPCA, the Bankruptcy Abuse and Prevention something Act, it happened decade or two ago. And basically what they wanted was something that was closer to the IRS's program. And what that means is that you're submitting financials. They're looking at what you have. They're figuring out what you can pay. And depending on what your financial situation is, they as a creditor still want to get paid. They just understand that in some cases it may be better to essentially write off some of the debt because it's unlikely that you're ever going to pay it. And their understanding and ability to analyze big numbers has told them that if they get someone back in compliance, which is, you know, we'll get into one of the other myths about what back into compliance means and why these aren't, you know, the golden bullet that some people think they are, you know, over time, they're going to not have to deal with that person as much. They're going to pay their taxes on time. You know,
that's the theory anyway.
Yeah, that's the theory. Well, I mean, I would assume that, well, obviously the number of people that end up back in trouble is higher than new people who get in trouble. It's obviously still low enough that the IRS sees this program as being of value. So, you know, in that case, that's what they're looking for. They're looking for what can we get? How do we basically get to a fresh start where you stay current on this? Maybe you don't pay us everything you owe, but you're going to pay us as much as we think you should. And so that's the key thing, is that, you know, you're disclosing a whole lot of financial information, and there's a bunch of calculations that go into it and a bunch of rules about what gets included and what doesn't get included and how much is exempt, you know, just like a tax return, to be honest, just with your current financial assets and cash flow versus yearly income. And then once they've done all that, you know, there's a number that you come up with. For some people, that might be 10% of what they owe, but they didn't get there because of the percentage. They got there because of what their current income and assets looked like. Just happened to be 10%.
So yeah, I always tell people, I said, imagine someone owes you $100,000 and, you know, they're sitting on $1 million in cash. Are you going to settle for 10%? You know?
Nope.
No. Obviously, the guy can pay. And so the same is true for an offer. The IRS has a strict formula that it uses to calculate your ability to pay the taxes,
back, and that's what it's going to be based on. There is some element of negotiation in there, but it's primarily a mathematical calculation. So that's myth number one busted. So it's not based on a percentage of what you owe, what your offer will be. It's going to be based on your ability to pay. That's the best way to wrap that one up. And you see it, you know, there's a lot of national resolution firms out there. There's some good ones, but there's many that are fly-by-night operations, and obviously they charge more for doing an offer. They don't really particularly care if they succeed or not, so they're going to tell you whatever it takes to get that money to file the offer, and they'll file those crap offers all day long. So
it's not everyone, but, you know, I have seen situations where, you know, someone filed three or four offers that all failed, or, you know, situations where someone had $100,000 in the bank, and you know, so they filed the offer without any planning, and, you know, the IRS paid the, you know, $6,000 offer fee, and the IRS came back with, well, you can pay us $94,000 now, you know?
Yeah.
Which, you know, if you're trying to do the right thing, you can see that coming from a mile away.
Yeah, I guess you could sort of spend your way to an offer, I guess. Just keep spending the money on the offers. All right, so the next one, though, is kind of the reverse, that there are some people who think that the rules are so restrictive that, you know, I make too much money or I have too many assets, so I can't qualify for an offer. And, you know, obviously that's not true. You know, a lot that goes into the calculation also takes into account things like if you've got a home, what's your actual equity in the home? So if you've got a mortgage, the IRS will take that into account and figure out what, you know, your ability to pay is. Same thing with your car and any other asset you might have with either a lien or some other, you know, encumbrance, they call it, on it. As well as far as income, you know, if you have more income, sure, you have more ability to pay, but you may also have other bills, health insurance, taxes, things like that. So it's not, even though it's a mathematical formula, there are things in there that you can use to see if you qualify for an offer or not. So don't think, well, because I have a home and I've got some equity in it that, you know, I can't qualify, or, you know, I make $100,000 a year, I don't qualify for an offer. You can qualify for an offer under those circumstances. It just depends on your financial situation. So the lawyer, accountant answered anything, it depends. So don't necessarily say, you know, I don't qualify. You may.
Yeah, and I would add on to that, you know, with the assets conversation, you know, it's an equity issue. And then there's also, you know, exclusions for things like income producing assets, and how those are dealt with, whether their equity is counted or whether the cash flow that's generated from them is counted. And then you start to get into kind of really complicated offer territory where you're probably talking with the person reviewing it and going over kind of very specific things. They're going to probably also want to know how much equity you have in those. You know, was it purchased? You know, did you do all these purchases cash in the year you were supposed to pay the taxes? Because, you know, then even if it's income producing, they're probably going to be a little bit more, you know, annoyed about that. But, you know, there's still the potential to, you know, make an offer or, you know, make some payments over time in a periodic payoff or something else that might allow you to keep those assets and just pay out the cash. Even if potentially you could sell them and full pay the debt, you know, so there's those kind of possibilities. So it's not just, you know, how much equity is in the asset. It's what can the asset produce? You know, how does it relate to your business? You know, is it sellable? Could you get money out of somebody of it out if you wanted to? There's a whole process of proving that you can't access the equity. And if you can't access the equity, then the equity is dealt with from the IRS's perspective. And it's not counted in some cases. You know, it's always in some cases.
It depends.
Yeah, it depends. Yeah.
But you're right. There's a lot of things there that, you know, professionals who do this a lot, you know, there's little tricks and stuff you can use to get someone an offer. When I say tricks, actually kind of leads to my next myth. you know, this is all about full disclosure. You know, you sign these things under penalties of perjury, and there are some people that have kind of said, well, you know, the IRS won't know if I leave off an asset or I don't fully report all my income. This financial analysis they do is quite, in depth, and they'll find things you didn't think you knew, you know, that you didn't think they'd find out. So, for example, I had a client, she purchased a new car after we filed the offer. It wasn't a very expensive car, but it was a BMW. And needless to say, I got a call from the IRS saying, hey, your client's got a BMW. I said, what? And, you know, I talked to the client, said, yeah, I turned in my old car and got a new BMW. It's only like $15,000. It was a used car. But the IRS picks up on stuff, yeah, and very quickly.
They don't like you to have a BMW, is what I have learned. It doesn't matter how much the yeah, car is worth. If it's a name brand thing, they should treat it differently. But there is a different tone if it's a luxury car.
They definitely will find things, you know, that you didn't even know about. So, for example,
Do you have a situation with an old IRA too, or something like that?
I didn't have that case, but I did have a case where a client, he filed an offer. His wife's business bought a skidder from a business and had listed it for sale. And next thing you know, because it was related, because it's his wife's business, they said, hey, look, we saw that she listed the skidder for sale for $250,000. We want to list it as an asset for the offer purposes. And I'm like, wait, what? Say what? So I didn't even know about it. And they thought it wasn't all that important to mention because it was the wife's business. So we had to go through and show this wasn't his asset. This is his wife's business asset. She bought it arm's length. She offered it for sale, but then went back and used it for a business. So it wasn't going to be turned into money. It was going to be income producing asset. Anyways, they can find stuff that you just, you know, you're not aware of. And so you got to list everything. Otherwise you're going to answer some awkward questions.
Yeah. And that's an example, you know, the example, I think I've actually maybe run into that once where, you know, someone has an old 401k that they completely forgot about. They actually thought they took all the money out of it, but for whatever reason, there was $5 in it. Now that I think about it, I think that's actually happened when they brought that up. And then it's just, what about this IRA? And it's $5. But they found it. And especially with accounts, financial accounts, you know, the government collects all that information. It's there. You know, they can get it when they want to look for it. You know, land, obviously, it's not that hard to do a quick title search on somebody. It's not that hard to do a vehicle lookup. It's, you know, it's not that hard to look at, you know, different transfer taxes that might have been paid. I don't know exactly if they can integrate around those, but, you know, there's paper trails with any kinds of big purchases or financial accounts. So it's not like it's hidden.
Yeah. And they also demand 3 months of bank statements at a minimum. So, you know, they'll find stuff on those bank statements and chase it down. So, yeah, you're definitely going to watch out for it. Sorry, that truck going by. So, apologize for anybody who hears the truck.
Next thing.
Next thing is, this one is a favorite of mine. This is what I get a lot. You know, someone will come in, I'll say, well, I did the numbers and I don't think you qualify for an offer. And they'll say, well, my cousin's roommate's best friend got an offer. So if they get an offer, I get an offer. It's pernicious, and that it's just because someone else got an offer doesn't mean you can. Everything is so very fact specific, and it doesn't for whatever reason, people, you know, he has a house, he has a car, he has a 401k, he's got a yacht in the Caribbean, you know, how do you get an offer? Truth is, you really don't know what happened to that person
or how much he paid.
Yep.
Because he might have paid the equity that he could have gotten by selling those things out of somewhere else.
Yep.
Or, you know, his rich father-in-law bailed him out. You know, you don't know. You know, he didn't have the cash, but someone else paid it.
Those things happen. And it's also conceivable he got an offer and then suddenly came into an inheritance or won the lottery. Yeah. So the thing to understand this myth is, just because someone you know who you think your situation is the same as theirs, that doesn't mean you'll qualify for an offer. You've still got to go through the whole process to figure it out. So don't be mad if, you know, someone tells you you don't qualify for an offer. It's because your situation is such that you don't necessarily qualify. And there's no reason not to get a second opinion, but just because someone else got it doesn't mean you'll get it.
Yeah, and the thing to remember too, if someone is turning you down to file an offer, they're likely doing that because they A, don't want to waste your money, and B, know that while that offer is in process, they're extending the IRS's amount of time to collect. Whenever you have an offer in process, the statute of limitations on IRS collection stops. So if someone is saying that they don't think an offer is a good idea, they're likely doing that because their professional ethics are telling them, you know, I know you'd really like to get paid. And, you know, this person, you know, clearly wants an offer. You know, I could fill out the form, but, you know, in my opinion, I'm just seeing that it's going to put them in a worse position than when we started. So, you know, if there's things that they don't know or you didn't disclose that might change that, you know, it's time to talk about that. But if someone is saying, I don't think you qualify, you know, they're doing that because they're trying to do the right thing for you. You know, if they thought it could pass, obviously they want to get paid, you know?
Yeah. If they're telling you no, there's a good reason why. And it's definitely, they're doing typically an offer and compromise tends to be the more expensive of the services that tax professionals provide. So, if you're not aware of that, it's very much a high ticket item. So if someone's telling you no, they're turning down a fair amount of money. So trust that they're at least trying to do what's best for you, and they're not saying it merely because they just, you know, want to get you into something more expensive. And I think another thing to keep in mind based on that is there are other options out there that are just as effective, if not more so, than an offer.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned, the extending the statute of limitations. If you've got an old tax debt, it may be coming about to sort of fall off the table, as I always tell people. You know, the IRS got 10 years, generally speaking. Why file an offer if you're so close to the end date? It'll go away on its own.
Yeah.
Bankruptcy is another option. We also have what they call a partial pay installment agreement, where you pay what you can, and that may be less overall in total payments than an offer. And let me explain a little bit deeper because I may not have said it well. A partial pay is, okay, if there's only a certain number of time left on the for the IRS to collect, and so the IRS is not going to liquidate your assets, but they're going to take whatever you can afford to pay them monthly. So $100, $500, whatever, that times the remaining months. And that may come up less than if you did file an offer where the IRS would look at your assets to satisfy the tax debt. So you may have to pay more. So there are other tools out there that can be used to help you out. So an offer isn't the be-all do-all. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah, and that partial pay, like you said, doesn't extend the statute, doesn't involve some of the same level of financial kind of picking in some cases. It can. You know, if you're dealing with a revenue officer, they're going to probably, you know everything that you have and maybe go, you know, you know, you're going to need to pay us out of the equity of that. you know, so... you know, there's, but broadly speaking, again, in general, you know, you have the opportunity for something that might do better with some other things. And, you know, depending on what your income is, if you don't have significant assets, you know, or those access, you can't access those assets, and your cash flow is low, you know, CNC could be an option to write out some of the statute too, without having to worry about the IRS, you know, coming and knocking on your door. So there's lots of options, and if the goal is to solve the problem and to not pay the full balance, you know, there are multiple ways to get there. And an offer is usually actually the worst option. It has the most impressive results for marketing. But if there's any way to get there other than an offer, it's usually the better choice.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely better because it's just so, for now, because of COVID, an offer could take you somewhere a year or more now.
Yeah.
In the meantime, there's a whole bunch of things. Actually, that's a great segue into our next myth. You know, I file an offer and everything's taken care of. All my problems are solved. It's like waving a magic wand. I'll let you start on this one.
Yeah, I would say that, and this is one of the reasons why I say that offers are usually the worst way to get it done if there are other options out there. Because, you know, when you accept an offer, that offer is accepted contingent on some future responsibilities on your part, which is that you file on time, you don't owe taxes, and you basically don't default on any other payment agreements that are part of that offer, assuming it's not a straight offer and it's a periodic pay or, you know, other stuff that's going on there. Basically, you got to fulfill all those responsibilities. And if you don't, what the IRS is going to do is they're going to default your offer. Say your offer is in default.
Yep.
Take all that money you paid, apply it to your liability, and put you right back in the collection stream. And so that's why I was saying that, you know, a partial pay can be better, or CNC, because if for some reason, you know, life happens, you know, you have the ability to not necessarily lose a status that's hard to get or shell out a bunch of money you can't get back. You know, it's so offers are really good if, you know, this was a one-time thing where, you know, you messed up, maybe you got, if you had a really good year or some other stuff happened and, you know, you've been compliant otherwise ever since and before. But, you know, if you've got years of compliance issues and you know, you look at your taxes for the upcoming year and you're not sure if you're going to owe again, you know, that's a real red flag that an offer may be shooting yourself in the foot. It sounds really good. Until all of a sudden the IRS takes that money and says, you still owe us the rest again. And so that's sometimes a hard conversation to have. I try to be as diplomatic as possible about it. But, you know, if I've had a conversation with a client where they've said that they think they might owe again this year, and then they start talking about an offer, hold up. Let's go over what an offer is going to go in, what's going to go into that, and what you're going to have to do to keep it. After I explain all the downsides to that kind of client, they're usually like, oh,
okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, current compliance is always for both offers and everything else is the big issue. And that means filing your taxes on time going forward, paying the taxes. And if you're employed, you know, making sure you have sufficient withholdings so you don't owe again for the next year. Or if you're self-employed, paying in enough through estimated tax payments so that you don't owe. And that's where people usually get tripped up, is they'll start an offer and they won't pay their estimated tax payments. And the IRS is watching it. And I've had a client who's self-employed and they're like, well, she's paid her first, but she hasn't paid her second. Or we estimated it should be $3,000, she's only paid $2,000. You need to tell us what's going to happen to get her caught up. Otherwise, we're going to default it or reject it. And, you know, for someone who's put in a lot of time and effort into getting an offer prepared, the last thing you want is for it to be sort of, you know, get out and you got to start all over again.
Yep.
You know?
And, you know, sometimes there are ways to save offers like that. You know, I know that, you know, you can always, you know, it's one of the rare cases where I would say that, you know, you can file an extension if that means that you don't have that liability on the books until you can full pay it. Obviously, you are supposed to full pay by your extension. And that's what you are required to do and what we're required to tell you to do. But if you can't, you know, you can keep yourself out of the billing cycle and potentially be able to make payments so you're current by the time you file. You know, there's also the 120 days to pay. There's a bunch of things with different upsides and downsides that you can do to try to fix that. You don't want to be doing that every year because, you know, every year you're risking your offer and the money that you paid to get it processed. But, you know, if something happens, you know, there are ways to ways to try to save it too. And that's one of the benefits of working with a professional from the start yeah. is they know the situation. And when hiccups like that happen, you know, they've got a bunch of things in their back pocket for how to potentially deal with it.
Yeah. I had a case where the accountant had set up a certain estimated tax payment and the client kind of fell back a little bit. So they were having a down year. So we reevaluated the estimated tax payment because there's a certain ways you can calculate it. And we were able to come up with a smaller number and able to sort of catch them up that way. So there's always things that can be done, but you need to keep it in mind when you're doing it that it's more than just following the offer and all problems solved. There are some things that you have to do, making the payments required by under the offer and, you know, making sure you're staying current with your taxes. And that's not just for the getting an offer accepted. For the next 5 years after the offer is accepted, you have to file your taxes on time and pay them on time. If you don't, now you've busted the offer and all of that interest, penalties, and taxes that you were forgiven come back into life, as well as any accrued interest and penalties that would have been charged up to the point that you defaulted. So now you're in a worse situation.
Yeah.
So just something to keep in mind. I'm trying to see if I had. I think that was all I had for MIS. I know you had a couple more than I did.
I think mine kind of, we touched on it anyway, but an offer will solve all my problems. No, an offer will not solve all your problems. In fact, it will give you different kinds of problems is what it will do. And so you're trading the problems you have because you're going to potentially save a bunch of money, but it won't solve your problems. It'll just give you new ones that if you can manage them appropriately are way more preferable, but you know, you still have problems you need to deal with. Another big one that I run into is, you know, my Social Security doesn't count or my X income doesn't count. You know, there are some limited things that don't count towards an offer. There's some specific kinds of combat injury related pay. I don't remember the exact kind and what they're under. I had to look them up at one point where, you know, they don't necessarily count for your ability to pay the IRS on some financial statements. But if that's all you have, then basically with the way everything works out, the exemptions are probably going to wash out that income anyway. And if you have significantly more than that, you know, there are some ways to exclude, like I said, some very limited kinds of income. But if you have the ability to pay, you're going to have the ability to pay no matter what in those kind of situations if you've got multiple reasonably sized income streams.
The big thing is
to just not think that because this isn't going to count, I'm not going to have to pay anything or have a very small offer. It doesn't always work out that way. You're going to get a deal. Might not be the deal you were hoping for, but it's still a good deal.
Yeah. It's a lot of people, when they do offers, they think of it sort of like a tax return. So when they consider what's income, it's what you would be taxed on the return. Well, that's not here. You know, same here. It's a cash flow exercise. Whatever's money in, it's going to be counted with certain, like you said, certain exceptions, and all of the money that goes out will also be counted with exceptions. And I think that's probably a good time to mention that generally people, when they're looking at an offer, they say, look, I've got no money left at the end of the month. And they think, oh, well, that means I don't, you know, there's nothing left over for the IRS.
Yeah.
Well, the IRS uses national and local standards based on statistical, samples of what people pay for certain things.
So basically your budget is not the IRS's budget for you.
That's right. that's a huge problem for people because they say, well, look, I've got all these expenses. Like in Maine, you know, in Cumberland County, I spend, you know, all this money for housing. Well, the IRS statistical amount may be substantially less than what you're actually paying, especially if you're living in, say, downtown Portland.
Yeah.
People get very much surprised and very angry, saying, well, I have nothing left over to pay the IRS. Well, guess what? The IRS says that there's no constitutional right to an offer. And so to have this offer accepted, you have to fit within our guidelines.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It doesn't mean that, you know, the IRS is going to force you to pay that much out. but for the offer, for it to be accepted, that's how they're going to calculate it. So you don't get as much as you think you do. And you may have expenses that are in the future that you're not paying right now. You don't get credit for that either. Well, I've been meaning to get health insurance. That's the common one. I've been meaning to get health insurance. Well, you need to get it now. Because if you file an offer and you're not paying it, you're not going to get it as a deduction, even though you do need it. Let's see, there was something else I want to mention on that one.
My retirement accounts, I think, was another
one. Oh, yeah, retirement.
Why don't you handle that one?
Well, and a lot of people will, if they have any familiarity with bankruptcy, will say, well, if I filed bankruptcy, you know, they couldn't count my, you know, my IRA, my 401k or other assets protected from creditors. So hence the IRS shouldn't be able to get at it. Well, unfortunately, those don't apply when making an offer. 401ks, pensions, IRAs are all counted towards your offer. Now, you do get certain reductions for taxes if it had to be liquidated. So, you know, the 10% penalty if you're under 59.5, roughly 20% is deducted for state, local, and federal income taxes. But if you've got an IRA, it's going to be counted. Maybe not 100%, but it's going to be counted. So it's not exempt. And the IRS isn't required to give you any credit for that. So even though Maine says, you know, you're protected up to, I think it's $1 million, not according to the IRS, because federal law trumps state law. So that's a sign to be considered term. So,
and the other thing, oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, there are, in certain types of offers, you could make an argument that some amount of that money should be protected if you're medically disabled or you're a retiree and you need that money for, so to avoid becoming a ward of the state, you may be able to protect it, but it's going to be counted. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah, you can basically calculate what it is as an income stream over time using some pension related rules. And you basically need to be retiring in the next year for that to count with, if you look through the IRM. So it's not like I'm 60, which again is a timing thing. So, you know, should you file an offer now or should you wait 6 months if you're, you know, 63, you know, those are the kinds of things that a professional is going to be able to walk you through.
I think that's one thing. It's not merely filing a paper form for this offer. I've had people tell me, well, I'll just file the offer myself. God bless and good luck. There's a lot of stuff that is not on the forms or is not explained on the forms that you have to sort of go and dig into the Internal Revenue Manual, sort of the IRS's playbook, and listen to other people who've been doing this to see what you can do, what you can't do, and some things, you know, there's maybe things that you're spending money on that you shouldn't. Hold on a second. Oh, there's things that you could be spending money on. Those are all things that you should be considering, but if you've never done it before, you wouldn't even think about.
Yeah.
So, that's my sort of warning to all those people that want to do it yourself. It's great for Home Depot. Maybe not so much for here, unless your stuff's very uncomplicated.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you're basically dead broke and there's literally nothing left and you owe $1 million. At that point, who cares? File it. You know, it'd be hard pressed to find something wrong with that. But everybody else, you probably want to take a look at that stuff. It isn't just filing a form.
Yep.
That's all I had for the big mess.
That's all I've got too. So what do we think we want to talk about next week? In case we get anybody here that, starts coming back from week to week.
Give our listeners sort of a coming attractions.
Yeah.
Well, next week we have the issue of bankruptcy. A lot of people see that, you know, under the misapprehension that if I've got a tax debt, bankruptcy won't take care of that. In fact, if you meet certain requirements, you can. So we'll just kind of go through bankruptcy and, you know, I'll talk about what the rules are generally, and then, you know, some tricks and some traps that you have to watch out for. But bankruptcy is definitely a way to solve your IRS problems.
Yeah, and that's one of those ones where I run into some, on my end, I don't do bankruptcy-related work, don't want to do bankruptcy-related work in my practice. Well, I'm not an attorney, so of course I'm not going to do, I'm an accountant.
So, you still run. You can still run the rules and tell the attorney.
Yeah, So, but yeah, that point being that I don't want to represent clients in that particular matter. Yeah. But you know, it does come up where you know, looking at it, like bankruptcy might be a better choice for you. You know, even if all your tax debts aren't discharged and only some of them are, but you know, you've got a bunch of old commercial credit card debt, or not commercial credit card, but personal credit card debt. You know, and some other things, you know, it's not just about dealing with your IRS problem. If you've got other creditors, it's about your whole financial picture. And if you can pay the IRS more, cause some other things get wiped out, that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's not fun owing the IRS, but they have the most structured and transparent processes for dealing with you. When you owe them, from what I've seen. So if you're being proactive, they're a very good creditor. If you're not being proactive, that's when they get mean.
Yeah. So my goal for our next session is to try to convince Jared that there is a place for him in the bankruptcy world. There's actually quite some interesting things you could do with it and things to watch out. But that's for next time. All right, Jared. Well, thanks for having me, and you have a wonderful day.
You too.
Thank you again for joining us for Tax Resolution Talk. I hope you enjoyed this interview. And as always, you can go read our show notes where I have contact information for both Jared and I. So with that, stay healthy and stay well, and hope you'll join us for the next episode. Bye.